Welcome to the Icon Podcast, a community of trained readers trying to become like Jesus. Or I always feel like I should say we're trying to become trained readers too. We don't want to act like we have that all down. But this is another one of our special episodes that we're doing monthly now with Tavani Mashaba, who is coming to us from Gweru, Zimbabwe. Tavani, welcome back to the Icon Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mike. It's great to be here. And interesting topic today. Excited to hear about it.
Yes. So, yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because our reason for having you on once a month is we're stepping away one time a month from our normal series this season, which is on new creation, and we're talking about the other realm, the supernatural, and things of that nature. And somehow, I don't know if you ever made a conscious decision of this or planned this in your life, Tavani, but you have become the spiritual realm guy. That's you become kind of the expert on that. I think partly you came by it honest, partly you were born into it to a degree, and the other part is the amount of study and work that you have put in and continue to put in as we talk about these things. And I love the perspective that you bring coming from outside of the United States, because, you know, there's a pretty different view on these things and perception and understanding between your average African person or even disciple and your average American and American disciple. But I think that's changing. It seems like we've talked about this before already, but I think people in the U.S. are, at least anecdotally, it seems like to me, becoming more interested in paying attention to the spiritual realm again and more sensitive to it. And one is just on a practical level. Two, I think, is, you know, there are scholars like Michael Heiser who have kind of brought that back to the forefront, the fact that we pushed that realm back into the shadows and the back room and not paid attention to it. And that not only is a problem, it's not necessarily consistent with the world as it is described by the Bible. Now, on the last time, you laid out a lot kind of that worldview, the divine counsel and all of that stuff that we see biblically. But today I wanted to talk about demons. Now, I'm not doing that because, like, maybe, you know, saying this is the most important part of the spiritual realm or the biggest part or the most influential or any of that. I just want to talk about demons, Tavani, because I woke up this morning and thought, doggone it, I want to talk about demons today. So that's what I'm hoping we can do. Now, I can't remember. One of the things is, with my age, this is terrible. Because you and I record these episodes, they're about a month apart, I have trouble remembering what we talked about in previous episodes. So I'm not sure what I have said and what I haven't, but the first teaching series that I ever did that, like, people really wanted to hear, and I was getting invited to other churches and people were finding it interesting and doing full workshops on, was called Hell, Satan, Demons, and Aliens. And this is like pushing like 20 years ago. And I laid out in there a lot of the emphasis was, we certainly talked about the biblical view of Sheol and hell and some of those things. And I've certainly changed some of my understanding of what the Bible says in those areas. And maybe down the road, we can talk about some of that. But I laid out in there a theology of demons. And I'll tell you, I stopped teaching that after a while, after a few years, even though it was really popular, because no matter how much I said, this is somewhat speculation, because the Bible seems largely disinterested in telling us exactly where demons come from and exactly how they operate and things like that. And so I would preface it and say, this was the speculation of the early church. This is what they taught and believed, and they built it some on the Bible, but it was speculation. So I would say that's all it is. No matter how much I would say that to Bonnie, people would come away and be like, well, that's it. That's the gospel truth. That's how the world is functioning. And so it just made me concerned that I was like, no, it's still speculation. We don't know that for certain. It seems plausible. But so I wanted to say that at the beginning of this short explanation, that this is kind of how the early church perceived it. And I won't go into all a big, long explanation, but I'll try to give a 2-minute overview here, which a lot of it, as you know, is built on Genesis 6, right?
Yes.
And so Genesis 6, it talks about the sons of God came to the daughters of men. And there's some debate over exactly what that means. But the Septuagint seems to be pretty clear that it took that as angels coming to human beings, like rebellious fallen angels. And that certainly seems to be how Jews before Jesus took it, and then how the early Christians took it. They seem to understand that it was angels. There are some scholars now that will say, no, it was the sons of Seth, or it was kings, or, you know, different explanations. But they viewed it as a part of the fallenness of angels as they came to human women and had offspring with them. And these offspring are called the Nephilim, which is, I remember, dude, this is a true story. The first Bible class I ever went to after becoming a disciple, we had like a you know, kind of a, I think they call it second principles or something, like a training class for new disciples. And they, at the end of our first episode, or our first class rather, they said, hey, write down any questions you have about the Bible or following Jesus or whatever, you know, and everybody else asked these questions about how do I do this more? How do I swear to you? My question was, who are the Nephilim and what is going on with that in Genesis 6? And the evangelist teaching it was like, I'm not answering that. You need to study that out and figure it out, because I don't think you knew the answer. And I understand. So the Nephilim, though, were the descendants of fallen angels and human beings. And based on the etymology of that word and some other things, it's believed that they were giants. They were men of renown. They were mighty warriors. And you know, maybe we'll have time to get into this later or whatever, but there is some evidence. It's scant, but there is some evidence that there were giants on the earth at one time. Now, some of that gets way overblown on the History Channel and things like that. But they have found, like in the 1960s in ancient Israel, they found giant spearheads. And they're like, no normal size human being could wield that. So they concluded, well, it must be ceremonial or something like that. And yet these spearheads had the signs on them of being used in battle. They, you know, they were chipped and that kind of stuff. And so there is a little bit of evidence for that. So these giants then roamed the earth. One of the purposes of the flood then, or one of the functions of the flood, it seemed to be, was to in large part wipe out the Nephilim, who had become very dominant and influential. Won't get into all of that, but it seems that the Nephilim survived that, at least some of them survived the flood. And gosh, I almost feel like right there we got to stop, because people are going to be like, wait a minute, what? People survived the flood? And it's like, well, Yes, because the Bible tends to use ancient Near East language, which was hyperbolic. And so when it says everybody was wiped out, that's not really how ancient Near Easterners meant that. What they meant is like all the cities were wiped out, all the civilization, you know, but it says only eight survived. Yet they didn't take things literalistically like that. Yeah. And so what probably the Bible is indicating is most humans were wiped out, but there were small enclaves that, you know, survived this cataclysm in one way or the other. We'll probably get questions on that. Need to go into that more in the future, but we'll leave that right there for now. And so then what the early church believed was that these Nephilim who had died largely in the flood, that they, because somehow this gets a little shady, but because they're the offspring of angels and humans, they weren't really fit for
either
any sort of, you know, where humans go or whatever. And so they were sort of doomed to stay on the earth as spirit beings, unclean spirit beings, and they're often called the knowers and the watchers and things of that nature. The Book of Enoch, which I know you mentioned before, gets into some of this. And so then the last thing I'll say is the early church kind of summed up, and they looked at a lot of the Greek religion of their day and the legends about the Titans and different gods and demons, you know, all of that, and said, no, those gods are actually demons. They're not made up. They're the remembrances of these demons, of these Nephilim, and their influence. And that sometimes they set themselves up as false gods. And so when you worship a false god, in one sense you're worshiping nothing, but in another sense you're worshiping a demon.
Yeah.
And that sort of
says so, yeah.
Idea. Mm. Yeah. And so, and then we see in the New Testament the idea of people being possessed by demons. And, you know, again, that's interesting because it doesn't really ever try to explain exactly what that is about. And you see, you know, Jesus and others doing exorcisms and casting demons out. And so that, you know, now we speed forward to today, where in the United States, largely, the Western world doesn't really believe in that stuff anymore, doesn't pay attention to it, but not so in Africa. So I want to ask you, Tavani, let me start with this. What is, first, do you have any comments on anything I just said? Let me start there. Any comments or additions to add to what I just said?
Well, I think you've pretty much, summed it up, you know, because even when we talk about, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean that some people survived the flood and so on? Because the text itself in Genesis 6 does tell us that they were Nephilim before and after, you know. And so that's the text tells us, and it doesn't go into detail to say how did that happen. And then definitely,
and we wind up making up these elaborate explanations like, well, they came a second wave and, you know, all of this stuff, but it's pretty obvious what it's saying.
Exactly. And then, and definitely the strong belief, in ancient Hebrew, was that the demons, the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, you know, because they don't belong to any realm. They don't belong to the, you know, angelic realm or the sons of God, the spirit beings, you know, and then they don't belong to the human realm. So they basically are left to wander the earth. And it's interesting because this is where you get to even hear of them being described as, like you alluded to, as unclean spirits. And, you know, and normally when you look into the Old Testament or in Hebrew thought, and then something unclean, the nuance is normally for mixing of two things that should not be mixed together. And so that's where you get the unclean spirit, meaning it's a result of two things or two entities that were not supposed to be mixed together. And then also you get the term also that is referred to as bastard spirits. they're referred to as bastard spirits. And so demons are also in Hebrew thought, they are also called those unclean spirits, the bastard spirits. Obviously the term itself describing in terms of their conception. And so it's very interesting to see how, you know, that evolves with time, because in the Old Testament, there's not so much, mentioned too much of, you know, the demon as they are described in the New Testament. They're different, it's one thing to note that when you then enter and you see that the demons in Jesus's days, they're behaving differently. There's a whole lot of terminology that has evolved, I think, mostly in the Second Temple period. There's terminologies and there's a borrowing of lots of terms from, you know, the surrounding nations, a lot of Greek mythology, a lot of, ancient Sumerian, elements in there as well. So that's why you now end up with the kind of demon that we see. But it's also interesting to note that there's some verses in the New Testament that actually there seems to be like an interchanging or some very blurred lines between where it would talk about epilepsy, and demon possession. It says, okay, he was healed of his epilepsy, and there seems to be a blurred line sometimes around that term, which is
no. That's interesting. I wanna get into that when we talk about the Western view of demons
right.
a little bit. That's yeah, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So what? Let me zero in here or begin with what is kind of the view of demons / spirits in general? And you know, on this episode, when we say in Africa, we understand that Africa is a very large continent with all kinds of countries and cultures and things. But I do think there's a reality that some commonalities emerge. There are certainly differences, but so we're not, I'm not using that term and just, sort of paint it all with the same brush, but we are scoping out a little bit to get the large view. So in the typical African view, what is kind of the view or role of demons and spirits? Maybe start there, and then you can dive into the African Christian view of what role demons play and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think in an African context, it's all very mixed up because there is the... When we've just described right now in terms of how the biblical worldview on that, and then you come to the African worldview, which has, elements of, okay, you've got the creator God, you've got him, and then there's a hierarchy of some lesser gods that serve him. And then you've got what you would then call your clan gods or your... for example, if I have my grandfather, okay, or my great grandfather, so he dies, and so he's basically ushered in, or he goes into the spirit world, and he becomes a guardian spirit, so to speak, over his family, over his clan. So there are ceremonies that are done. You gotta. Within a year of his death or their death, that you have to have a brewing of traditional beer, and it's all this ritual, and you know, there's a cow involved that's dedicated to that. So actually we, in our homesteads, there's a cow that is dedicated to be said, that's your ancestor. Because when we do this ritual, you are basically bringing them back. The idea is they are floating around somewhere, their spirit is floating around. So you're bringing them back, you're calling them, you're summoning them so that they can come and take their place over the clan as a guardian spirit, and they've basically joined the spirit realm. And it's interesting because I think in the Bible you hear terms like, you know, he has been laid with his fathers, you know. So in the African context, it's like you literally go to your fathers, to your forefathers in the spirit, and they welcome you. Yeah.
So those spirits, then the ancestors, are they always good, or are they seen sometimes as something to be feared? Can they become evil? Mm-hmm. Are they different than demons?
Right. So now here's the thing now, is that the ancestors normally are very interested in protecting their, you know, his descendants and so on. Unless they were a witch, you know.
So, okay. Yeah.
So if they were a witch, they're going to be a problem spirit, you know. And so there's that context. There's the context also of if they died unceremoniously, like they were murdered or you bewitched them, so they don't rest and they become what is called an avenging spirit. Okay. So an avenging spirit, this is the interesting thing, Mike. So we've had situations where, you know, somebody murders a person. And, okay, so let me speak from my family, okay? So my it's interesting because my grandfather was the only boy in his family with sisters and so on. So now the story has it that somewhere down the line in our family, someone murdered somebody. They murdered a guy that was, he was not married and, you know, he hadn't had any children. So he died. And so because now this guy died, his spirit is not at peace. It's an avenging spirit. And so he wants to revenge. He needs to either cause problems in our family or to kill somebody. So what happens now is I'm told that a ritual was conducted to hand over my grandfather to him, to this spirit, so that my grandfather like becomes his adopted son, you know, so that from my grandfather, this guy can then have children, and then whoever comes out from that becomes his children, in this, you know, spiritually and so on, and so that's how it works. So if you don't do that, there's a belief that that avenging spirit will cause problems, mishaps, until you pay his, you go and pay, you look for his family, you pay, you admit what you've done. There is a traditional chief. So this is all acceptable practice in terms of in our traditional laws. You have a traditional chief who actually will preside over this case. And they have a witch doctor there. They have either a prophet, you know, and they'll say, okay, so tell us what's going on. And they'll say, okay, this guy's murdered somebody and this guy is manifesting, his spirit is coming out, is causing problems. So they'll say, okay, so, what's needed? Okay, we want 5 cows, we want 10 cows, or you got to give us one of your daughters and what have you and so on. And so this is actually done officially by the traditional chief. You know, so I'm saying this to paint a picture of how we don't really have so much of, in the African culture, there's not so much of demons as we understand them, and then how they're brought up now when you come to the religious side of things. It's fairly a more recent adoption into this. They have more of spirits that are categorized differently, you know. So if we don't do the ritual to bring my grandfather back, he becomes a spirit that's wandering, and again, things don't go well. Quote unquote, you know, because we haven't done what he needs to do to cross over to his father's, and then he becomes a guardian spirit. Now you have situations where witchcraft, where somebody they kill somebody, they for ritual purposes, you know, that's very common for us here in Africa, where people kill people for business, for their business. They will bury the body parts under their shop or under their business. You know, that's very common.
It's intense.
Yeah. So again, that brings another dimension of that person that has been killed. Their spirit needs to be tamed. So this guy needs to continue to do rituals to tame that spirit so it doesn't avenge. So they do their witchcraft to deflect that spirit so he can't really see who killed him and so on. So again, that's another thing. And then you've got, I don't know if you've heard of, in English, the best translation would be goblins. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, we have goblins and so on. So basically where those...
Now, is that like in South Africa, you have the Tokoloshe?
Exactly. So the...
Okay.
You have the Tokoloshe, you have all those things. So they come in. So you've got the Tokoloshe. And so those are... they come as a result of witchcraft. Sometimes you've taken somebody and you've captured them in the spirit, and you convert them. They become these little spirit beings that can sometimes you know, manifest as little human beings that but don't really look normal, and so they do all kinds of bidding for
them. They're tiny, right?
Yes, they normally like dwarfs,
and that's we had a woman explain to us. I don't think it was Harare. I think we were in the KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah.
And she was explaining that that's why the beds have to be lifted up off the ground. You don't put your mattress right on the floor because of the Tokoloshe, right? Because they can come get you at night.
Yeah. So you have all these things, and then you have the Tokoloshe. So that basically becomes your slave. You know, you send them, they go and get money for you, they go and do stuff for you. And then you've got where a person dies, they cause the death of somebody, and the people will basically go to the grave, and their belief is that they can extract that person from the grave. And that person becomes like a slave. And so that's why you find that when we bury somebody, we have to go there like first thing before sunrise. We have to go to the grave, the few family members, to go and see that everything is okay. There was no meddling with the grave and so on. And so again, the belief is that if someone is killed in that way, that their spirit can be captured and used. So there's references, even guys that have been part of this, that they'll tell you they go to the grave at night, they ask, they do a blood bow thing, they ask for permission to use this person. They ask them, can we use you? And they, you know, and they get that spirit. And so that spirit is basically used to fulfill all kinds of problems, you know. Yeah, so it for in our African context, most of these are conjured from the ground up, you know. So in other words, we don't have so much of when we look at the biblical perspective of these, you know, disembodied spirits of the Nephilim and the spirit world and how these guys are, you know, interfering in human affairs. Yes. There is that belief, but it looks like from an African perspective, you have, you know, various multiple entities or spirits that take different forms and shapes. Animals can be used, you know, snakes, hyenas, anteaters, things like that.
So in the typical African view, the origin stories of the spirits are different than this, you know, the ancient Christian explanation as to where the spirits came from. And I'm just trying to sum this up. Correct me if I get it wrong at any point, but it sounds like there's a strong belief, obviously, in the spirit world. The origins are perhaps a bit different. It's more rooted in these are the souls of departed humans, the ancestors, and some help, some are a problem, but they're very prevalent in daily life. Like, you know, if something goes wrong, it's because a spirit's messing with me. And if something goes right, it's because a spirit's looking out for me. Do I have that generally correct?
Yes, that is in the right direction. Yes, we do have some similarities in terms of the belief of a creator God, a supreme God, with lesser gods that also work with him. And so, but then there is that medium, you know, that you can't approach God or directly, you know, we approach God through our ancestors. They present our prayers. They present our pleas to the creator God. But then largely the spirit realm that is interfering with human life every day is basically the disembodied spirits of humans. Either your ancestor, either someone's been murdered or someone has died, and they are active in the realm and they participate in your day-to-day life. So we have spirits everywhere.
Okay. And is there a common name for this creator God, or does that vary from tribe to tribe?
Right. So in Zimbabwe, for instance, we have a common name in the two dominant languages, which then you find in many parts of Southern Africa. Like, for example, in Ndebele, you find Ndebele words are the same with Zulu and Xhosa in South Africa, because those are people of the same sort of ancestry. And then you have in the Shona side, there's similarities with other languages, the Bantu languages, in I think some of the languages up north, like in Rwanda or Uganda, you know. So you have, for example, in Shona we say Mwari or Musikavanu. So Mwari is like translated God, you know. Because you can have, it's like Elohim, you know, but you can also have other Elohim. So you can have Mwari as the God, or Zimwari, you know, which are little gods, you know. And then you've got Musika Vanu, basically means Musika is the creator, and then Vanu is humans. So Musika Vanu is like the creator of humans, you know. So we have that.
So would a Christian then refer to God as Mwari?
Exactly. We actually say Mwari. That's when we pray, when we talk about God, we say Mwari. We don't really use Musikavanu, we use Mwari. And
that's more the word then. You're obviously adapting the concept of who the creator is to what's revealed in the Bible. You're not just transmitting, you know, taking, oh yeah, the God of, you know, the creator God of the ancestors.
That's right, exactly.
It's now a different person. You're just using the same word.
Exactly. We actually say Mwari, that's God, you know. So that's how Christians, you know, basically use that word. In Ndebele, it's Tiko Onkulunkulu, which is in Zulu, Xhosa, and all that, which again is, you know, God. So Mulungu is in Zambia, they'll say Mulungu, which can, it's funny because Mulungu is like in the Zambian language is Malawi. It means God, and also it's a word that has the same root word for a white man.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've been called Malungu before. I'm familiar with that term. Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know. Yeah.
That I did not know that part though. That is interesting. Mm. We might have to explore that someday. Mm. That sounds not good to me, but seems to be some problems there. Wonder who encouraged that idea. But okay, so let me switch now to African Christians. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is their general belief? So in other words, you grow up in this ancestral religion and worldview. As someone becomes a Christian, do they completely abandon that worldview and say that's all wrong, doesn't exist? Do they adjust it, mm-hmm. you know, and modify it some? Do they continue to believe in that? Mm-hmm. Do they reject it? You know what I'm getting at here?
Yeah.
So what's that process look like?
Right. So, yeah, I think it all boils down to different types of Christianity. We've got very large sects of Christianity that are basically syncretic in their nature, you know, where they believe in God, Mwari, but then they also believe in the ancestors, you know, so there's this syncretism that happens there. And funny enough, most Catholic people here in Africa actually are very, you know, they syncretism there. They believe so much in that. They still come to church, but they'll still go and do the rituals back at home, you know, that kind of thing. So a lot of the Christian world in Africa, they don't want to mess with their ancestors. So we've even seen that affecting a lot of disciples as well, especially now when people get a little older and things aren't going so well, either economically, jobs, they're not getting married, and so on. So the belief is always, you see, we've been telling you, you haven't been participating in the rituals, annual rituals, you haven't been coming for these things. So your ancestors aren't happy with you, so they're not blessing you. Yes, we understand about God, but your ancestors are the ones that, you know, appeal to God on your behalf. So you're not married, you're 45, you know, you're a woman or whatever. And it's because of that. So it's becoming.
And is it also, Tavani, like I know you see in the New Testament, where one of the reasons the Romans were upset with the Christians for not honoring the gods was that messes with all of us.
Exactly.
Like it's not just your life might not go well. That messes with the whole community. Do you have that element as well?
Yes. We
like you're gonna get the spirits mad at all of us.
Exactly. That's why it's not raining anymore. That's why we're having drought. That's why things are crazy. It's because you guys are not respecting the ancestors anymore. We have these holy mountains where traditionally we go there to ask for rain, you know, and you have this rainmaker, witch doctors and elders, and they come there, they spend time in those mountains and caves asking for rain. And then now you come and you say, ah, I don't do that anymore. So it's your fault, it's on you. And so it is difficult to switch for a lot of Africans, but then mostly the Pentecostal, you know, your Pentecostal, your evangelicals are quite radical. They've completely discarded that, you know, and say, nope, we're not doing this ancestor thing. We're not doing all these things. And obviously it comes with conflicts in the family, because it's a fine line where there's a feeling, hey, look, you're dumping our culture here, you know. For example, I'll give you an example, Mike. I've got, unfortunately, you can't see, but on my forehead, I've got two incisions, and on my chest, I've got two incisions that were made by a razor blade. And then this was done by a nganga or a witch doctor. So he did that, and then he put some, we call it muti or some whatever, you know, herbs or powder, and he put that. So that was done for my protection when I was a child. When I think it was done when I was, you know, a child in my maybe 8-9 years old. That was done, and it's done to all of us, you know. So, so now, even a baby when they're born, you can't take them out until they're like what, 2 weeks to a month old, because the fear is that if they go out and they haven't been strengthened, firstly they must be strengthened by a witch doctor or somebody where they put something on their crown, because they're afraid that if you don't do that, their crown will fall in, which now the doctors explain as dehydration. And so they say the child will bump into a witch. As you move around, you take the child to a clinic, they'll bump into a witch, and the witch's powers will affect the child, in the, you know. And so there's all these things where you need to do that to protect. So I remember when my son was born, I had a lot of conflict with my in-laws because of things like that. They were, you know, my wife's grandmother was like, hey, we got to put this around his waist. We've got to do this. We've got to put this on him, you know, for protection. And now, because I'm a Christian now, I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. You know, we trust in God and so on. So it created problems, you know, because they were like, hey, we know about God. I'm Catholic, you know, but we still have to do this. You know, so again, let me tell you a funny one, Mike. So when I was in high school, just about to write my O levels, which is, I'm not sure what equivalent that would be for you guys, but it's a very important exam that allows you to proceed either to high school or you can go to a technical college. And so my grandmother in Chipinge called this one, you know, prophet / witch doctor to say, hey, can you protect my grandchild? You know, and so he basically did two things which were very interesting. So I had a lotion that we were using. So he took a matchstick, lit the match, chanted some things, and put the matchstick and put it off into the lotion, and he left the matchstick in there. And he says, so when you go back to Bulawayo and you use your lotion, when the lotion finishes, you take out the matchstick and you put it in the new lotion. This will keep you protected, you know. And then he took a nail, you know, just the usual metal nail, and he cut, you know, chopped off a little bit of and left the head. And then he opened, you know, your big pen, you know, usual pen, you know, your big, and he takes out the little refill thing. He sticks the nail in there, puts it back. And then he says, so when you use this pen and the ink finishes, remove the nail, put it in the new thingy, and continue to use that. You know, this will protect you. So I went back with that to school. So the first day I'm at school, I'm using my pen. The next thing, somebody steals my pen. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, I'm going to fail. And then, so I'm using my lotion, and one of my cousins comes to visit us, and he takes a bath, and then he uses my lotion. He sees this matchstick. He thinks this is just, you know, piece of rubbish. He throws it away. So I'm thinking, gosh, man, I am so doomed, man. But funny enough, I passed my exams without all that.
Well, I'm glad you made it through that. Let me ask you one final question, and I realize this has been great, and we're not even going to get to the Western view today. We'll do that next time, because this is all interesting and really good. So, and this question may be a little difficult to answer because I know it varies by denomination and Christian tradition stream and all of that. But I want to kind of zero down on like a Christian in Africa, their worldview of spirits, demons, things like that. Is there still an idea that the demons and spirits play an integral part? If something bad happens, it was because a demon did it. If a teenager has an addiction or somebody struggling with mental health, is that believed to be demons that need to be exorcised, or is it seen from a more Western point of view? And again, I know that there's wide variations there, but can you generalize a little bit and say, what is that, you know, what does it look like?
Yeah, I think that one is very interesting. Generally, and I say this from most, obviously, Pentecostals and all that, they are big on this demon thing. They don't believe that anything happens by chance or randomly or accident. And even many disciples have that belief. Many, you know, African disciples, and I'm talking from here in Zim, except maybe the newer generation of the younger folk, they have a more westernized view. And they believe in like, hey, come on, people get sick. Hey, come on, man, accidents happen. But the older folk with a more traditional value, and obviously coming in with the worldview from the African culture, a lot of Christians believe that there is no such thing as a random accident. There is no illness, miscarriages, anything, children failing at school. It's like you're not getting a job. Things are not demons, you know, demoni. We say demoni, something is going on, or someone has. And that's why it gets blurred. When I mentioned earlier about epilepsy and demon possession, you find, you know, mental health issues and stuff. There's always that belief that no, this is definitely demonic. You know, someone has a problem with unfaithfulness, or they've been immoral, or they have a problem with pornography or whatever. It's like, that is demonic. That's demons right there, you know? So a lot of times we had situations where people are genuinely struggling with alcoholism, addictions, and so on. So when you go to a church or so, they'll always find there is an entity responsible for that. Nobody is responsible for their own sin, mostly, generally. No one is responsible for the consequence of this. It's like, that's demons, man. We got to find who's bewitching you. You know, you are not advancing in life. And sometimes the poor dude, man, is not budgeting. He's taking all his salary and is going out and drinking binges and so on. And then it's like, nope. We got to go to the village. We got to go seek answers. It's demons. You got to go to the man of God or the prophet. He needs to pray for you. He needs to lay hands on you. It's all demons, you know. So it's rarely that people can take something and say, hey, let's think about this a little bit more. So, for example, when I hear about demon possession, I want to interview. I want to ask lots of questions. I want to hear what's been going on. How long has this been going on? What's up? How are they doing generally in life? I find out if there's any trauma, has anything happened to them, and what, and so on, you know, so that I don't want to jump quickly to saying it's a demon possession or it's not. I want to be very clear. And, a number of times I've come out of talks with people and they've seen the need to go for counseling. They've seen the need to go and get help because they've connected the dots with some trauma, thing that has happened, and it has been helpful. And then I've seen situations where people that previously weren't disciples were having some weird things happening. And the moment they become disciples, it just stops. It just stops. You know? Yeah, it just stops, man, and things start flowing. So those are some interesting, that's what I would say.
So you obviously see, some of the, what the Western world would call scientific causes and things like that, but you still think demons play a role. There's still something there to be considered. You're just trying to see both perspectives. Is that right?
Yes. I think I've seen enough, even growing up and even now. I've seen enough in my family. I've seen around me to know that there's something else that sometimes tends to happen. You know, so I want to enter it with an objective, an open mind, and taking time to really analyze and pray through it and be objective. I mean, I also read a lot about mental health matters. You know, I want to understand neuroscience and all those things. I ask questions from psychologists, professionals, and I want to learn all those perspectives, you know? Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. So, no, that's good. So next time, I think I want to talk about what are some of the things that you have seen. Because I think that's good for us, because we don't always hear some of those stories and perspectives. And I know I've had disciples from Africa share things with me, and I'm like, whoa. And it's almost like this challenge for me, like, I believe you. Part of my brain believes you, but then the Western part says, no, that can't happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what to do with that.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of like Sasquatch. Half of my brain totally believes in the existence of a Sasquatch. The other half says, no, rationally, I don't think it's possible. And so I'm constantly torn. So I'd love to talk about what you've seen, and then the Western world's perspective and view, and then maybe what we need to see, what we're missing, and how we can come together. Because I think you've kind of put together a healthy perspective of the combination of the Western world and the more traditional view of the spiritual realm, one that comes from kind of a unique stream of both the traditional African ancestral view, as well as the African Christian view, and then the more Western view. So I think that's going to be really helpful. So we'll pick up there next time. I look forward to it. Devani, thanks for joining me. And I'm glad, man, we made some changes. And well, really, you made some adjustments, and dude, our connection was perfect this time. Awesome. It was a little rough our first couple episodes. I was worried, because I was like, man, this is such good stuff, but if we can't get the connection figured out and recording from you being in Zimbabwe, like, we may not be able to keep doing this. But this was perfect. It was really good. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month.
Awesome.